This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Despite being regarded by some as the second most important commodity behind oil, the iron ore market garners relatively little attention. It's a necessary input for the production of primary steel, and iron ore feeds the world's largest metal market and is the backbone of trillion-dollar global infrastructure. Iron ore prices have enjoyed a great 12 months until recently, when the coronavirus outbreak hit demand expectations in the world's largest market for the metal, China. But it's against this backdrop, and despite persistent load shedding, that Kumba Iron Ore delivered a record payout ratio of some 92% of headline earnings per share. That's for the full year, exceeding its own 50 to 75% dividend payout policy. The company declared a final cash dividend of R15.99 apiece, which combined with the interim divvy of R30.79 amounted to a total divvy for the year of R46.78. Really chunky that. That's a Kumba created value of just a shade under 20 billion rand for shareholders and its empowerment partners in the year. I've got Chief Executive Themba Mkhwanazi on the line. Evening, Themba. Against that backdrop, Kumba's value over volume strategy has clearly paid off handsomely for you and for shareholders. Just take us through what the strategy entailed at an operational level.
Thanks, Michael. Yes, we are very pleased with the results. The strategy is very much focused around margin enhancement and, of course, the extension of the life of our mines. More specifically, though, from an operational perspective, it's very much around recognizing that we have to continue to improve our productivities, particularly of our key waste-moving gear, and we've also got to improve our operational efficiencies. Coupled with that, cost efficiency improvements. So that's one aspect of the strategy. The other aspect of the strategy, though, also recognizes that because we're in the Northern Cape, we have access to the highest quality hematite iron ore resources, and therefore we are able to get a premium for our products because of the lumpiness of the ore from a size fraction perspective. And again, because of where the markets were and the flight to quality, we benefited handsomely in terms of the premium that we got for our products, far in excess of about $18 per ton if you compare the reference or the Platts 62 price.
And looking at an operational level, tons to the mill, total tons mined increased 2% to 297.9 million tons. Mining activity clearly improving in the second half following that first half where you had some challenges with your primary equipment reliability. What was the specific issue there that you've managed to get on top of in the second half?
Overall, as you've highlighted, you know, production volumes were flat, you know, and again, the reason was largely around maintenance issues. We had maintenance issues in the mine in relation to our key waste-moving fleets. We also, which effectively were the shovels, the rope shovels. We also had challenges with regards to our processing plant, and all of this primarily at Sishen. And again, we had a challenge with equipment availability and reliability with regards to the primary crusher and also some conveying systems. We're happy, though, to say that, as you've alluded to, that mitigation measures were put in place. And in the second half, we did see a step up in terms of the outputs, which meant that measures that we put in place started to bear fruit. We are still working on ensuring that we get to the levels where we need to get to, but we're very pleased with the progress made in the second half.
And that is the encouraging sign for shareholders. Overall, your operational performance, how was it impacted by load shedding and the persistent issues that we've seen around Eskom being able to deliver a secure supply of power to the mining industry?
Yeah, I mean, because we're an open cast miner, when we look at energy, I mean, our energy requirements in terms of electricity probably makes up at maximum 20%. So it's not a big impact. We also have the flexibility as well that we are able to switch from the various modular units which have catch-up capacity. So in a load curtailment situation, we would shut a particular module down which has more catch-up capacity. So as a consequence of that, the impact has been minimal. Clearly, you know, if the challenges with the electricity were to develop and were to run for extended periods, that would be a concern for us.
What is encouraging, and speaking of state-owned enterprises, is the improvement seemingly with Transnet. So you had an improvement in rail performance overall. Iron ore rail to port increased by 3.4% to 42 million tonnes from just over 40.6 million tonnes. So quite clearly, we are starting to see signs of an improvement. There were derailment issues with Transnet that you suffered over 12 months ago. What do you put that down to, that improvement on the rail side?
Look, I mean, post the challenges that we had in 2018, clearly it was very important for us to work with the executive of Transnet. And again, that resulted in a steerco and a working group committee between ourselves. So the relationship has had a significant impact in terms of that performance. And that relationship as well has allowed us to work together to effectively support each other as and when we've been going through some of the operational challenges. And yes, of course, you know, from a rail perspective, we haven't seen the performance of the rail since 2014. So we're very pleased about the progress that was made. And in fact, for 2019, we did not have any disruptions in the form of derailments.
It doesn't mean logistics is not without its issues, because if you look at your selling and distribution costs, they were up 5% to $6.5 billion, but that's largely due to higher demurrage costs caused by port constraints and above inflation increases in Transnet tariffs. So we continually have this issue in the country with the high cost of moving goods through our ports and via rail and all the rest of it. Is this a conversation that you're having with Transnet to try and improve and ease the cost of moving commodities in and through our ports and borders?
I mean, very, very much so, Michael. And I mean, it is gratifying to us as well that, you know, it has been a key focal area, even, you know, from comments made by the president with regards to administered prices. So, I mean, essentially last year, I mean, part of the challenges in terms of the higher prices were some of the challenges we had at the ports, clearly wet weather, some maintenance issues as well that we had to overcome in relation to some of the gear, particularly around stacker reclaimers. But again, I mean, as I say, you know, the relationship that we have was such that we were able to ensure that that minimized the impact. And again, you know, we had a record a quarter in terms of shipments for 2019.
Well, early signs that we are starting to turn a corner with a very critical state-owned enterprise, that, so that's welcome. Zooming out and looking at the more macro level at the iron ore market, a lot has been made of the potential impact on demand by this novel coronavirus outbreak in China. It still seems to have markets quite spooked over in Asia. US markets keep rolling on. What impact do you see coronavirus having on the iron ore market over the year ahead?
I can obviously essentially talk about what we are experiencing. So at this stage, the impact has been limited. What we have obviously seen is a reduction in terms of the steel mills. Initially, there was a 15% reduction. That has obviously deepened down to the 30% level. But the steel mills are still running. Obviously, inventories are building up as a consequence. However, though, that has also coincided with some supply disruptions. The wet weather in Brazil has obviously impacted on supply there, and also the weather aspects in the Pilbara coast with the three cyclones. And then because of that, that obviously has obviously mitigated against the reductions in the steel demand. So we are of the view as well that as and when people start to go back to work in China mid-March, then the impact would be minimal. Obviously, if it does extend beyond that for a very long time, then that would obviously have an impact on us. We're quite confident as well in the sense that we're also seeing the Chinese authorities responding by stimulus to obviously prop up a demand. So whilst I might not say it, but we're likely to probably see a V-type recovery.
And that is the consensus that we are seeing in the market. It's not a structural decline. It will bounce quite quickly as soon as the infection rate starts slowing. Timber, lastly, and it may seem like something of an obscure question, but it came up with an interview that I conducted with Master Drilling last year, the fact that they lost quite a key contract, a 2 billion rand contract with you that you decided last year to hand over to Rossond, a family-owned, decades-old drilling company. Why was that decision taken to move that contract away from Master Drilling?
Like any company, Michael, I mean, We follow a process in terms of contract renewal. This was a contract renewal process. We follow a process where we elicit RFQs and various parties obviously pitch and tender for the work. So Rossond was successful in terms of that bid. And again, it's in the normal course of how we and others do business. We're particularly excited about the outcome of that process because clearly the winning bid brought along with it improvements in terms of technology and taking us to another level, particularly when it comes to exploration drilling, making it a lot safer in terms of automating some of the drilling components. Also allowing as well for the first female drilling crew because there's less manual handling in terms of the new drill. And the other benefit as well is that in line with our localized procurement focus, the winning bid as well also came in with a favorable arrangement in terms of the empowerment of a local host community company who forms part and parcel of the winning bid. So we're very excited from a technology perspective, from a safety perspective, and from a sustainability and a community perspective.
Kumbai and ore CEO Themba Mkhwanazi reporting back on an exceptional year for the iron ore producer with attributable earnings surging to just over 16.2 billion. From 9.6 billion in the year prior to that. And that's a wrap from the show tonight. Thanks to sound engineers Mataba Taba Radebe and producer Andres Matlangu. The cat San Mohammed is in the Jazz Lounge in Cape Town, and maestro Richard Koch with the full works up next in Joburg. Good night.